All right. You can see it's the power of unseen. Faithful people to change a story. So, how many of you like award shows? Like Oscars, Grammys, award show. I'm not talking loud enough again? No, I don't watch them either, Tracy. They're horrible. Eva likes them. Some people love those things, right? But they give awards for like the best actor, right? They also give awards for the best supporting actor. So you may know that. But then they give awards for like best costume, set, design, something another. And those awards are so important, they don't even show them on television. Do you know that? They're like, there's awards they give out before the show actually starts. So they're unseen people, right? That's what we're going to be talking about today. I'm not going to talk about any of the protagonists of Bible stories. We're going to be talking about the role players, the people who are part of stories that you may know and you may love, but they're not the stars. When you go out into the street and start talking to someone about the Bible, no one is going to know these people. But God, in His infinite wisdom and love for us, put them in the Bible. And so, oh, I have control of the slides. I was thinking I could say next slide, but look, they gave me this, and it's got a pointer. I'm so excited. This is power, guys. It's like, look, this is what it said. Introduction and big idea. That's what AI said. Here we go. The power of, oh, look how small that is. Man, I can't see that. Can you guys read that? All right, good. So, we're going to be talking about some unseen biblical figures. They're not unseen. They're in there. But I just want you to think about the fact that they're not the role players. And then this is where I'm going to tell you what we're going to learn and what we're going to get the application out of this. And then we can discuss the stories, and you can tell me if the stories support these outcomes. I like this one. Faith over prominence. Significant in God's kingdom depends on faithfulness, not social status or visibility. Isn't that a great thing? Isn't it great that we have a God, and He says it, He's not a respecter of persons. We have a God who loves us, and our faithfulness determines our relationship to Him. Not the fact that you have this or have that, the fact that you don't have this or don't have that. It's your relationship with God, your faithfulness. And now I got to get my glasses because I can't see a thing. And the encouragement out of these stories is for each of us. Sometimes we feel unseen. Well, God sees us, absolutely God sees us, but we do feel unseen. It's easy to feel like the things you're doing are not being noticed, and some people love that. Other people feel like, hey, I don't, you know, no one knows what I'm doing. But the outcome of this is I want us to think about these other unseen people in these stories and remember that small, faithful actions can have amazing impact. There's a movie called The Patriot. Any of you ever seen The Patriot? You know, I love that Patriot, and what's the other one with Mel Gibson? Braveheart, thank you. Thank you, Braveheart. Those are like two of my favorite movies. But in The Patriot, they kidnap his son, and he takes his other two sons to go get his first son back from the British. And he hands his son the gun, and he hands him a gun and says, remember what I told you, aim big, miss big, aim small, miss small. I know it's just a line from a movie, but I have applied that to so many things in my life. Sometimes we get caught up in the big things, right? The huge things, and like, if I do this, this will have this impact. But doesn't life tell us that huge things are made up by successfully completing dozens upon dozens of small tasks? And sometimes when we aim big, like, I'm going to get this done, we forget the fact that it's made up of small little steps. And so I overanalyze things sometimes, and I think about that a lot. If I do this, does that progress me to where I want to go? Our goal is to get to heaven. And let's aim big, right? I 100% recommend aiming big. That's where we want to go. But it's the day-to-day actions that we take that move us along that path. So seen or unseen, those small little actions that we do, and we're going to look at some of these actions out of the scripture here. They are small little actions that can have an impact in people's lives. Okay? What is this one? Oh, faithfulness over status. That's, we just talked about that a second ago. That's kind of the heart of this discussion, that faithfulness matters more than status. And in these stories, you're going to find, like I said, these are not the protagonists of any single story. There's no human. There are people in these stories who have big titles, but they're not who we're talking about. We're talking about the people who supported those people. The little small things they do having huge impacts. And again, the idea that if we continue to persevere, we'll get to our ultimate goal. All right. So everybody open your Bible. We're going to start with the first story. And we may be on this one a while. This is why I said it's somewhere between 10 minutes and 2 hours. Because I like this story a lot. 2 Kings chapter 5. 2 Kings chapter 5. Let me see if I can get the slides caught up with me. I made this graphic, by the way, that I found. That is the actual, it said, Google said that's a picture of the Jordan River. I don't know, I've never seen it. But it's dirty, and this story talks about the Jordan River being dirty, so I figured that was a good one. How many of us know this story about Naaman? Well, let's read it together. I'm going to start here at verse 1. Now Naaman, captain of the army of the king of Aram, was a great man with his master and highly respected because by him the Lord had given victory to Aram. The man was also a valiant warrior. You put period there, that's impressive, right? But the next few words change things. But he was also a leper. How many even know what a leper is? Leprosy? I'm not a doctor, but it's a rotting disease that infects the skin and gets into the muscles and fibers, and it is, I believe it is fatal in most instances unless it's untreated. And my impression and study tells me it was also contagious. So typically lepers were sometimes shunned from society. You know, I wish Bibles had pronunciation. So if I mess up a pronunciation, we'll just act like I said it the right way, okay? Now how would you say that? Arameans? I want to say Armenians, but I know that's not right. Now the Arameans had gone out in bands, had taken a captive a little girl from the land of Israel, and she waited on Naaman's wife. So Naaman's wife's got her a servant. She said to her mistress, "I wish that my master were with the people who is in Samaria, with a prophet who is in Samaria, then he would cure him of his leprosy." Naaman went in and told his master, saying, "Thus and thus spoke the girl from the land of Israel." And the king said to Aram, King Aram said, "Go now, and I will send a letter to the king of Israel." He departed and took with him 10 talents of silver and 6,000 shekels of gold and 10 changes of clothes. That's a lot of gold, by the way, 6,000 shekels of gold. He brought the letter to the king of Israel, saying, "And now as this letter comes to you, behold, I have sent Naaman, my servant, to you, that you may cure him of his leprosy." When the king of Israel read the letter, he tore his clothes and said, "Am I God to kill and make alive, that this man is sending me word to cure a man of his leprosy? But consider now and see how he is seeking a quarrel against me." It happened when Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his clothes, that he sent word to your king, saying, "Why have you torn your clothes? Now let him, Naaman, come to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel." So Naaman came with his horses and his chariots and stood at the doorway of the house of Elisha. Elisha sent a messenger to him, saying, "Go and wash in the Jordan 7 times, and your flesh will be restored to you, and you will be clean." But Naaman was furious and went away and said, "Behold, I thought he will surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and wave his hand over the place and cure the leper. Are not the Abna and the Farfar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in them and be clean?" So he turned and went away in a rage. Then his servants came near and spoke to him and said, "My father, had the prophet told you to do some great thing, would you not have done it? How much more then when he says to you, 'Wash and be clean'?" So he went down and dipped himself 7 times in the Jordan, according to the word of the man of God. And his flesh was restored like the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. So who is the protagonist? Who are the stars of this story? Don't say servants yet. That's later. Later.
The young girl.
That's the servant. We're gonna go. We like who? If you just read this story, who's the star? Name and thank you, Tracy. Yeah, y'all are getting ahead of me. Don't do that. I got notes. So typically we talk about this story, and we do talk about Naaman a lot. So let's talk about him. What type of man is he? He's the captain of the army. Like he's the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staffs of this army that has defeated Israel, right? He's a very powerful man. He's got some money, right? It doesn't say where that money came from, the 10 talents of silver and the 6,000 shekels of gold. He's got money, like enough money to buy himself a cure for his leprosy. What else can you figure out about Naaman by reading this? Well, he had leprosy. Very good. He had leprosy.
He thinks a little bit highly of himself.
He's a man of status, right? And we talked about it, you know, that we said the word status before. Naaman was a man of status.
But he was willing to listen to a servant.
Yeah, see, there's a very interesting thing. So we are going to talk about the servants here. We're going to talk about the servants here. Let's talk about, there's two different groups, and we're going to talk about them separately, okay? Let's start at the beginning, you know, verses 1 through 4 or so. We're going to start there. Who's the first servant that comes up here? The maid, right? Naaman's wife's maid. Where did she come from?
Israel.
She came from Israel. How did she get to be with Naaman? Wife. The Syrians captured her. That makes her a slave? She's a slave. I mean, we all have our own perspective and perception of the word of slavery. None of them are very good. I don't think anybody would go, yeah, that's a good thing. None of us would say that, right? Yet, Naaman had leprosy, and what did the maid do?
She wanted him to be healed, and she thought of a way that it could happen.
Isn't that interesting? So what do we know about, and maybe this jumping a little bit, but I just think, what do we know about Naaman when the person, the little girl that was captured and given to his wife as a slave says, I wish he were in Samaria. Like, they didn't beat this out of her, did they? Yeah. I think she liked him. That's my conclusion. Like, Naaman might be a good person. Like, I mean, not good in the sense of he's righteous, but good in the sense of he's a good man. Like, and my assumption is he treats people fairly. That's an assumption. Could be wrong. We know that. So the maid speaks up, right? And we have, how many words is that we have from her? Like 20 words. She says, man, I wish he was in, you know, she tells the wife, man, I wish Naaman was in Samaria because we got a prophet there who could heal him. Now, if you're Naaman, what is it? No, let's go back down. We were talking about Naaman. Let's look at this. What do we know about? What can we conclude? What can you infer? That's a better word. We don't want to conclude. We want to infer. What can we infer about the maid girl that Naaman reacted the way he did? Naaman's wife and then Naaman reacted to what she said. She was trustworthy.
He might have been desperate to find a healing, is willing to listen in.
He could have had desperation, right? Yeah. You know, I like the word trustworthy. How do you become trustworthy? It's funny. I've spent in India 2 weeks in India. The reason there is we've got 2,000 employees there cranking out tax returns. We're having some issues between the integration of the U.S. firm, and we use the word trust all the time. I trust. The people in the U.S. don't trust the teams in India. We say that all the time. Trust. How do you build trust? I mean, you're on point today, my friend. Like, aim big, miss big. Aim small, miss small. How do you build trust? One little action at a time over a period of time builds trust, right? When your kids start driving, do you say, here's the keys, go? Well, I probably did. Here's the keys, go. Or do you give them small little trips to take with the car? Or when your kids are old enough to finally stay home by themselves, do you go away for the weekend, or do you go out and to the grocery store first and then come home and make sure that the house is still standing, right? You do little things that over time build trust. I'm inferring a lot about Naaman's wife's maid, but she had done something as a servant of God over a period of time where she said, hey, this man, who's my master, I'm his slave, I think this, and Naaman reacted so much. He went to the king and said, hey, king. Do you think they really said thus and thus? I feel like that's what you say, like when, like, maybe your wife's talking a lot and you kind of zone it out. She goes, well, she said blah, blah, blah. He said, I don't think we'd ever do that, Jackie. Never. I've heard examples of that from other men, but nothing, something I would ever do. Thus and thus said this. I mean, he went to the king. So to me, the first unseen person who changed this entire story is a young slave girl. All right, who had lived a life in such a way as an example of a servant of God, so that when she spoke, and yes, maybe he was desperate. I'm sure he was desperate. He has leprosy. But she spoke in such a way and had acted in such a way that Naaman reacted, to the point he took it to the king and said, hey, king, I need to go to Israel. Could someone read 1 Corinthians 1, 26 through 29 for me? Unless I beat you there. I should have it bookmarked, then I'd definitely beat you there. I'll go since I've got it. For considering your calling, brethren, that there were not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble. But God has chosen the foolish things of the world to shame the wise, and God has chosen the weak things of the world to shame the things which are strong. And the base things of the world and the despised God has chosen, these things that are not, so that he may nullify the things that are, so that no man may boast before God. God turns the world upside down. And in this story, a humble, no status person changed the outcome for a man of status, a man of wealth. So what can we infer? I love that word, I guess. What can we infer from this in our lives? Dirk. No, don't know her name. Yeah. Is there anything that we can, I go back, I mean, that's exactly right. Again, unseen. What can we infer about our lives by her actions? Yeah, you never know the impact of what you're doing.
Do what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, JC. Yeah. Yeah. You can't control every circumstance. You know, you can only control what you can control, and it's a lot less than you think. Yeah, he put a lot on what she said. So let me ask you a different question. I can't believe there's only 15 minutes left. I got like 12 stories, so I told you somewhere between 10 minutes and 2.5 hours. But this is the one I wanted to spend the most time on because I love it. Because this got two, and I think they're both great. What does this, challenge us in any way when in today's world where people are elevated? You know, there's a lot of discussion of status. People elevate themselves. You know, like, you know, you can flip through social media and find 50 different people saying 50 different things. I don't have TikTok, but I watch Instagram Reels. I've got a weakness for that. But they say about 50 different things about God. Does this in any way challenge us from a modern perspective about what it means to evangelize? Do we tend to sit back and think evangelism is David standing in the pulpit talking, or some preacher standing, you know, some preacher somewhere doing something big? I tend to find in my life it's easy to substitute big actions for little actions and to say, oh, that person is really good at that. I mean, David's a good preacher, right? I can't do that. You want to talk about tax? I mean, Paul and I can get to a conversation about tax and bore you guys to sleep pretty quick. Can talk about that a long time. David can't, by the way. David doesn't know anything about federal income taxes. That's my gig. That's right. Yeah, he puts out the Word of God. He does a great job. But that's just a part of evangelism. And I think to me, you look at this story, if you're going to teach someone about God, we have to look at ourselves and say, what are we teaching people about God on our day-to-day, in our day-to-day life? Like you said, you never know that impact you're going to have. Every one of our interactions, by the way, teaches people about our relationship with God. That's hard to remember when you get... I jokingly called Jackie. I called her for real. And I said, I've been in India now for 10 days, and I need someone to be rude to me. They were the nicest. They are so deferential. Every single person I met, unbelievably kind, just wanted to make me feel good about myself to the point, honestly, guys, it was annoying. Like, I need an American to, like, they don't get sarcasm. And that's a big thing with me. Like, I needed that, okay? But if you were to ask me about every single interaction I had with an Indian person, I have positive reviews. 5 stars on Trustpilot, right? I've got that. If someone's doing a Trustpilot review of you and your interactions with everyone you encounter in your life, I mean, we get angry a lot in the U.S. Like, you know, we're very narcissistic as a society. People are out to get me type of attitude. And it creeps, that part of the world creeps into what we're doing as Christians. This maid built trust by her daily interactions. Are we building trust with the world, with the people we encounter, by our daily interactions? Are we evangelizing the world in the micro sense, not in the macro sense? Are we doing enough so that when people look at us and they say, hey, I need someone, I need something, and you say, hey, I've got something that will help. It's called the Bible. It's how I live my life. Let me tell you about it. That they're going to listen to you enough that they'll take your message to the king. You know? Now, that's a high standard, right? It's a very high standard. And I don't know how we get to that point because we don't live in these specific circumstances. But I think that's the lesson I took from this. And I know it's just 2 sentences, but man, the more time you spend thinking about like what you know about interpersonal relationships in the world today and the reaction to what this young lady said, it amazes me that that's what happened because of the situation she was in and his impact. So, all right, that's only half the story, and we got like 11 minutes. Who are the other stars of this story that aren't the protagonist or they're not Naaman or Elijah or the kings? It's the other servants, right? Now, we don't know anything about these servants except they're servants. Again, we do know that these servants were willing to say something to Naaman. Because what happened? Naaman's a man of status, you know, and like, Naaman wanted a Super Bowl halftime show, didn't he? When I get healed, guys, I need there to be lightning and like trumpets from heaven so that I know something's happened, right? That's what Naaman says. We like big productions. I guess that's human nature. Naaman had it too. But Elisha didn't even come outside. Elisha just sent his messenger and said, hey, go tell Naaman to go dip in the Jordan River. And Naaman didn't like that. His pride got hurt. So Naaman's angry. He's angry. And he's like, he didn't get what he expected. And he's raging about it. Have you ever dealt with an angry person? We discussed this at dinner last night. Here's some advice. Here's the first thing to say to an angry person. Now calm down. That works, doesn't it? Yeah. Okay. Hopefully, I think that's worked never in the history of the world, yet we all do it. We just can't help ourselves when someone is not behaving the way we want them to. We say, now calm down. How do these servants talk to Naaman? I think that's the, I'm going to tell you, that's the lesson I want this. How did these servants talk to Naaman? They say he started with, my father. You know, that's the New American Standard Version. They addressed him with respect. Right? I mean, they know who he is. We've already discussed that. Obviously, he was a man who was willing to listen. We learned that from listening to the maid. But how did they communicate with him? They used logic. They spoke kindly. They didn't say, hey, Naaman, you're an idiot. Dude. I mean, they did. I mean, they kind of said that, didn't they? They said, like, if he had asked you to conquer a city, you would have conquered a city. He just said, go dip in a river 7 times.
What have you got to lose?
Yeah, what do you got to lose? But they didn't say it, and they didn't say those words. They used language from their understanding of who Naaman was and how he would react to that. Let's look at Ephesians 4:15. And I'm like on point turning the Bible today. I want to start in 14 because I hate starting in the middle of a sentence. As a result, we are no longer to be children tossed here and there by waves and carried about by every wind of doctrine, by the trickery of men, by craftiness and deceitful scheming. But speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in all aspects. Why did my wife text me in the middle of church? But speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in all aspects into Him who is the head, even Christ. Speaking the truth in love. That's what we're commanded to do. Did Naaman's servants speak the truth to him with love? See, I think they did. Because if they hadn't, he would have reacted differently. I mean, you've been in the situation, probably, where someone said, hey, now calm down. Or someone said something that, where you're angry, it made you go to level 2 or maybe level 7. They didn't do that. Galatians 6:1. That should just be about a page back. Brethren, even if anyone is caught in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness. How are we supposed to communicate to each other when we're doing something wrong? Yeah. Did Naaman's servants communicate with a spirit of gentleness to Naaman, who was being an idiot? And I think they did. I think they did. So, how do we balance in today's world speaking the truth in love with a spirit of gentleness with the society that we live in? If you're looking at me for all the answers, this is where, like, I'm staring back at you. That's good. Yeah. Is it scary? Am I the only one who's scared sometimes to speak up when I see things? I don't want to get fired, guys.
Yeah.
Right? I don't want to get fired. Maybe that's not the right attitude, but I mean, just being honest with you. It's scary sometimes. I work in a... sorry, hand jerk. I'll get to you in a second. I work in a really big firm, like big, you know, 20,000 employees. We got all the DEI stuff going on, guys. They may hide it now because we're supposed to hide it because of the new, you know, the Trump administration, and we're a government contractor, but it's still going on. It's Pride Month. My firm's already tweeted out its Pride Month stuff. I don't know what to do sometimes, guys. It's hard to speak the truth in love in a world where we feel we're being oppressed. Now, I don't think we're being oppressed. I mean, Paul was stoned. We're not being oppressed that way, guys. Yet. We're not being oppressed that way yet. There are places in this world where Christians have been targeted and killed. We're not there, guys. We live... Every time I leave the country and come back, I unequivocally say, I don't care how you feel. Leave, go somewhere else, and then come back. We still live in the best country in the world, no matter how mad you may be about things that are going on. Absolutely. The level of freedom we have to do things is amazing. But it's scary. Dirk, well, like you said, relationships. If you have a relationship with someone, you can start a conversation. We see a lot of videos now of these people standing on street corners doing confrontationals. I mean, they just want videos for their, you know, social media. Are any of those ever effective? I mean, if you're sitting there with two people who are opposed from a belief standpoint, I need to have a conversation with one of the Hindus there. I'm like, is there anything I could say to you that would make you not believe in your 10,000 gods and believe in my God? And he's like, no. He's like, this is a core belief system of mine. Okay? That's a core belief system. So what happens now? If I know him for 20 years, I could have said, Akilish, you've seen me live. Let me tell you about the God I serve. That's a long, 20 years, maybe. Core beliefs are hard to change. Okay, I hope you've appreciated this. Now we're going to go over 20 different stories in 3 minutes. Okay, first, there's Jonathan's armor bearer. You guys should read this. Jonathan is about to go into a battle that's just ridiculous. And he says to his armor bearer, hey, let's go do this crazy thing. And his armor bearer says, Jonathan, whatever you say, I'm with you. Like, he supported him because he was pursuing righteousness. Good story. We were going to debate how to say this name. By the way, here are my co-pilot. Look at these graphics. I don't even know what those are. God's provision is a teapot. How would you say that? Zarephath?
Zarephath.
Good story. Famine in Israel. Famine up in Zarephath, which is in the middle of, like, you know, modern day Lebanon. It's the enemy. Elisha goes up there. It's right before my favorite story in the Bible, which is Elijah and the prophets of Baal. You know, he does the sacrifice on Mount Carmel. Phenomenal story. And we get to the New Testament. Look at this. Like, that co-pilot did that. Jesus says, go fill the things up with water. And then he says, go pour the water. And these servants, like, if they pour water into the people's glasses instead of wine, what's the reaction they're going to get? But they went and did it, right? Because Jesus said, do this. They trusted Jesus, and they went and they poured the water into the wine glasses. There's a lesson from that. We're going to skip that. Okay, don't ask me. Rhoda... Peter's supposed to be dead. He knocks on the door. She gets so excited. She didn't even open the door. She didn't look to see that it was Peter. She just, someone knocks on the door. She goes, who's there? They go, it's Peter. And she doesn't open the door to go, is it really Peter? She runs back and tells people, Peter's here. Faith, complete faith in what was going on. And then stirred the crowd to action. So, key themes and applications. We all have value. Whether you're seen or unseen, we have value. We're all called to action. The word faithful is in that sentence too. We're all called to act in a faithful way. Like has been said here, sometimes those actions are small. Sometimes they're big. I'm not against big actions. We need to do that sometimes. But you can be a complete Christian and be in the background and do small things. That's a pathway to heaven. Okay? And that's why there's purpose in the unseen. You don't have to be in the front of everything. You don't have to be famous. In fact, perhaps it's better if people see Jesus instead of seeing us. And we can be part of making that happen. So, thank you for your attention. I told you it was somewhere between 10 minutes and 2.5 hours. I got through the first story, so you're lucky we didn't get to the next ones.